Brian Laundry been fooling everyone? Police now say there is zero trace of him in that Florida swamp. Do they really know if he's there? Have they wasted almost a month and millions of dollars searching for him in the wrong place? And if he's not there, then where is he? Tonight, former Navy SEAL Joel Lambert, aka TV's most hunted man, tries to help find Brian Laundry by sharing the secrets that he's used to elude the world's best fugitive trackers. And then, are lies such a terrible thing, especially if they help to catch bad guys? What police might be doing to see if the Laundries are lying. All straight ahead. Welcome to Banfield. Nearly a month after Brian Laundry slipped out of his parents' home under the watchful eye of the police, we really might just be back at square one, folks. Northport police say that they have found no traces of Brian Laundry in that Carlton Reserve, that swamp that they've been searching since his parents reported him missing way back on September 17th. Could it be Brian Laundry was never there in the first place? The announcement comes a day after Laundry's father, Chris Laundry, went to the swamp, his lawyer says, to help point out his son's favorite hiking spots. Maybe the experience that the authorities had in the swamp with Mr. Laundry confirms for the cops that they are looking in the wrong place. What a concept. I'm joined by News Nation's Brian Enten. He is live outside the Laundry home, as he has been from the beginning, staking out and watching every single movement. And yet again today, a number of big developments in this case. Brian, start with the fact that you had a chance to speak at length with the Northport police, which is surprising since they have been speaking so little.
Yeah, it's been several weeks since we've been able to get them on the record. Once in a while, they'll send a text message or an email to confirm something, but I had really been pushing them to do this interview. Obviously, there are things that they just can't talk about because the FBI is in charge of the investigation, but there are some things that they are able to talk about because they've been in charge, basically, of the search here in Northport. It's mostly Northport police officers doing the search, and you mentioned it. I mean, I was kind of shocked to learn today that they have not found one thing connected to Brian Laundry. We had heard all sorts of rumors and even some reports this week. They may have found a campsite, they may have found clothes or other items. Well, today they confirmed for the first time absolutely nothing, not one trace so far of Brian Laundry there.
I think you and I have been at this story so long, I have lost count on the number of days that they've been out there, but it's somewhere around, I feel like, a month now. If nothing has been found, Brian, nothing, not a trace, why on earth are they spending so much money out there?
Well, I think there is still something that we don't know. And when I talked to Northport police, you could tell there's something that they're not releasing and holding back. And I don't know what it is. Did they catch Brian Laundry on video there? They've admitted they were doing surveillance on Brian Laundry of some kind. Did they perhaps follow Brian Laundry to the swamp when he went there for the hike, but maybe not follow him into the swamp? Again, we don't know, but I suspect there's still something they're not releasing that's causing them to still focus so much on the swamp.
Okay, well, here's an important question. Is Laundry dead or alive, in their opinion?
That is an interesting question. I've been wondering it. You know, the experts that we've interviewed, most of them say they believe that Laundry is still alive. But we were curious what the police think about that. Take a listen.
Based on what you do know, do police believe that Brian Laundry is still alive?
It's possible. I certainly think that it would not surprise me if he is. It wouldn't surprise me if he's not.
Is it 50-50 in your mind? Do you have an inkling one way or the other?
I mean, I guess if we had to put odds on it, I would say that that's probably pretty close. You know, I think I don't want to we've gotten in a little bit of an issue by thinking we knew something, you know, and I just don't know that it does any good to say, oh, I think he's alive or dead. I think it's certainly possible one way or the other.
Okay, Brian, that just frustrates me to no end, because I sort of thought that they had a clue if they were spending so much time in the swamp. But what really was intriguing, and it has all of our viewers online searching for answers, sharing theories and philosophies, is that Chris Laundry left that little yellow house behind you and went out to search a full 3 weeks. 3 weeks after he suggested his son was missing. All of a sudden, he's giving trail tours 3 weeks and millions of dollars in searching later. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And then, lo and behold, after whatever information he gave or didn't give yesterday, not one vehicle out there searching, or at least that's the last I heard, that there was no searching at all in the swamp yesterday. So whatever that man did after he drove through that barricade with his red truck sure didn't lead to a whole lot of searching today.
You know, even the police today, and, you know, you have to really push them to get these answers, and I get it, it's an active investigation, but at one point, even Josh Taylor there said, this is odd. He used the word odd when it comes to the Laundries and their story. And you mentioned it. We were out here yesterday morning, Mr. Laundry, Christopher Laundry, the dad, gets in his red truck right here, bright and early in the morning, and he left, and we followed him. He went to the reserve. He parked inside in sort of a forest area that we couldn't get to. They picked him up on what's called a gator. It's like an all-terrain vehicle. There was a helicopter up. We were able to get aerials. They took him into the swamp. He got off the gator, and he was on foot most of the time. For almost 3 hours, they were walking. According to the lawyer, he was showing them places where Brian hiked. But again, no sign of Brian. And then today, to get the confirmation from police, they haven't found one single trace of him after all of this searching in the swamp.
Well, maybe he's a conscientious hiker and he packs out what he packs in. I mean, the whole thing is so ridiculous. I can't even believe we're having this conversation half the time. And Brian, don't tell me now, because I can see something behind you. It's a sign. I actually know what's on the other side of it. I'm going to ask you about it a little bit later, because it's a doozy. And the story behind that sign behind you is a doozy. But I got to ask you this other important question, and that is the relationship that the police have now with, you know, Mr. Laundry, because clearly they, you know, spent some time together, and also Mrs. Laundry. What do you know about that?
So we learned today that the relationship is evolving, which was sort of apparent yesterday when he went out to the swamp with the police. You remember when all this started, when we started out here almost a month ago, we learned that when police went to the front door and were trying to talk to the Laundries about Gabby when she was missing at that point, the only thing that they would tell police is, here is our lawyer's cell phone number. We will not talk to you. Here is our lawyer's cell phone number. Well, that has now changed. In a sense, they are now sort of working with the police. We know that happened at the swamp. To what extent, we don't know. But listen to what police had to say about that. Do you believe the family at this point? Is there reason to not believe them?
Yeah. At this point, everything that I've learned and we figured out is I don't know necessarily what to believe anymore. I think it's certainly possible that they're expressing what they know, but we'll see. I mean, this is an ongoing investigation that will continue to evolve. And, you know, I think you saw yesterday the family was out there helping in the search. I think, you know, it's a sign of them trying to work with investigators, so I hope that is, you know, the beginning to maybe more of what they know.
So how interesting, Ashley, to hear him say that even he doesn't know what to believe, but it does appear they're at least giving these parents the benefit of the doubt, or at least that's what they're trying to portray publicly.
You know, thank you for saying that, because honestly, when I heard the evolving business, I thought, well, that's just a euphemism for I'm not telling you nothing, because evolving could mean they're becoming a lot more cooperative and we're starting to get some real evidentiary information, some directional information that can lead us to a real, you know, closure in the story. It can also mean we're getting close to charging these fellers. You know, like it can really mean it's evolving to a point where we're done and we're going to take some action. Did you get a feel or did he have a real poker face?
He had a poker face. And again, during the whole interview, I was trying to gauge, is he trying to put this out there to send a certain message, but they know something different? Or is this actually what the police think? And do they feel like the Laundries really are cooperating? But I'll tell you, I was out at the reserve yesterday when Mr. Laundrie was there, Christopher Laundrie. And, you know, it did feel like he was working with the police. When he finished at the reserve for 3 hours, we followed him when they were leaving because he was being tailed by the FBI, and we were like, we got to see where they're going next. So we followed along. They went to this other neighborhood, which was interesting, but at one point, Christopher in the red truck pulled up next to the FBI Tahoe, and they were talking to each other through the window, and he was sort of directing them to whatever he wanted them to see. So there is definitely a cooperation happening now.
Okay, another really important question here is, and everyone's been asking it, Brian, but, you know, they somehow, this guy got out of the house. We know that he was back in Florida. We know he parked the white car, the white van that Gabby owned in the driveway. So we know he was back at that little yellow house. That much. We also know that he went to a campground with his parents. So how on earth did the police let him out of their sight? Because they knew something was fishy, right?
Yeah, when I had my little notes for this interview today, the things I didn't want to forget, that was like my number one star. Do not forget to ask, how did Brian Laundrie get away? Because I was here in the beginning going to the press conferences every day where I was the one who asked the question on the Thursday. To the police chief, do you know where Brian Laundrie is right now? And he said, yes, we know where he is, but I'm not going to tell the media, but we know where he is. And then it was just hours later when he was missing and they had no idea where he was. So I asked police about that today. Was he under surveillance? I mean, did you have eyes on him?
What I'll say to that is that we were doing everything within the law that we could with the facts and the circumstances that were at that time.
Do you have any idea how he got away?
What I'll say is that that is a consistent, something that we're working to figure out. As far as how he got away, I don't even know how to answer that.
Well, what I mean is, you know, if he was staying with his parents at the house, and I was out there, there were a lot of police outside the house
Why didn't you see him?
I didn't see him, and I was out there. Police were out there. I mean, we've heard stories. Could he have gone out a back door? Could he have, you know, run through a yard? I mean, do you have any idea?
Yeah, no. I think certainly what the family has told us is that he drove out to the park and walked out into the woods. I think that is certainly on the table.
So interesting to hear him say they are looking into it. Something happened here. He was under surveillance. They apparently knew where he was that entire week, but then he managed to just vanish on that Friday, Ashley.
I want to add that to my big timeline. I'm going to do that. The day that the police said, yes, we knew. We've got eyes on him. We know where he is. We're just not going to tell you. I want to add that to the timeline, and then I want to really digest all of that, knowing what we know now. Okay, Brian, don't go away, because when I come back after the break, I'm going to take our viewers to what's happening on the lawn behind you. Listen, we've seen protesters come to the Laundrie's house for weeks now, right, with bullhorns and, you know, all sorts of things, but the ones who showed up today and put that sign in that lawn, this is next level. Next level. When we come back after the break, we are going to take you around the front side of that sign, and you are going to find out what it says. Okay, I follow this story like you do all day long. I am looking for every morsel of development on this story, because I find this to be one of those puzzles like Casey Anthony, where you just keep finding out things that make you say, who does this? Who behaves this way, right? I think that's your outrage too, right? There's a young girl who's dead. There are all these pictures of her, so we feel like she's part of our life. And then this guy just bolts and his parents don't help. But that's just the essence of it, but it's enough to make you mad. And it's... If you think it's enough to make you mad, you would not believe the ladies in the neighborhood and what they did today. And I can't even explain it for you, so I'm just going to show you. Take a look.
Is it silly? Where are y'all from?
Across the street.
Or you live in the neighborhood?
Yeah. Get this side again. Yeah, there we go. It's good enough. Very good. Hopefully they can see it.
So that is what the laundries are going to see when they wake up tomorrow, and if they ever decide to come out the front of the house again or maybe peek out those windows. Just in case you couldn't read it quickly, because I know it went by fast and the printing was kind of small, it said, remember me, Gabby Petito, Roberta, and Brian, I used to live here. And, of course, a very visible picture of Gabby Petito. Brian Enten, I said next level. It is subtle, but it ain't subtle at all.
Yeah, the minute I saw this happening earlier, I texted you right away because I was like, this is something we haven't seen, Ashley, before. We were over at the truck, and I heard that banging, and I was like, what is happening? So I ran out and got that video. This is the sign here. It's not facing the street. It's facing the laundry's house, and those women hammered it right into the ground. We won't get on the laundry's property. We'll stay on the swale, but you can see again, you read it, but it says, remember me, Gabby Petito, has a picture of Gabby. Roberta and Chris, I once lived with you. And we know that Gabby lived here at this house with the Laundry family for quite some time. They were very, very close. And that's one of the things that has enraged the people in the neighborhood and the protesters the most. I think that is what pushes them over the edge, that this was not just the Laundry's son's fiance. This was a young woman who lived in the house with them. And that's what those women said got them so upset that they came out and did this tonight.
Right. And listen, they had they did it with grace, right? No bullhorns or epithets or swear words or anything. They just left their sign and wanted to, you know, leave the message. What I found remarkable is that normally this is the way it works with the media. For those who are watching right now, there's like a whole phalanx of cameras and media people, and you don't usually see it because the cameras are pointing towards the action. But the people who live near there usually get very angry and they don't like the media to be around anymore. And instead, the neighbors don't like the laundries, not the media. They don't like the laundry. So that was surprising. One last thing, quickly. Brian Enten, it wasn't the only sign that showed up today with a message for the laundries. There was one in the sky as well. Tell me about it.
Yeah, there was another aerial plane, banner plane that went over today. Justice for Gabby was on the banner. It flew over this afternoon. This is another interesting story. It's a group of TikTokers. I've been texting with them. They were letting me know it's going to be back today. They've done it now two times. They raise money on TikTok. They charter the plane with the banner, and they decide on TikTok what messages they're going to do, and they did it again this afternoon.
Unbelievable. They're raising money on TikTok to charter a plane and put up. And this is the second message again. End the silence. Justice for Gabby. I mean, the action just, it doesn't seem to end. Brian, again, just a phenomenal job. Thank you for your hard work all week. And I hope you get at least a little sleep this weekend.
Thanks, Ashley.
Such a great reporter. Nothing misses. I mean, nothing escapes him. He sees everything. Okay, so we have to take a little bit of a break here, and I'm looking ahead, and I've got something else really good for you, and that is this. When it comes to a manhunt, Brian Laundry may not be the most wanted man, you know, in America in terms of dangerous criminals, but he is definitely the most talked about fugitive online. After the break, I'm going to ask TV's most hunted Navy SEAL, the lone target himself, Joel Lambert, where he thinks Brian Laundry's hiding and the tactics that he might use to bring him to justice. Welcome back to our special coverage of the Brian Laundrie manhunt. For many TV viewers and online followers, you know who you are. Brian Laundrie is the most wanted man in America. But the title of television's most hunted man, well, that belongs to a guy named Joel Lambert. A Navy SEAL for 10 years, Lambert was the star of the show Lone Target. In each episode, he had just 48 hours to elude the best fugitive trackers in the world, including the Korean National Police in South Korea and the U.S. Army's Phantom Recon Unit in the Arizona desert. There is nobody in the world more equipped to avoid capture for long periods of time, and so we thought who better to help find a man on the run like Brian Laundrie than the man himself, Joel Lambert. Thank you so much for being with me tonight, Joel. I just keep thinking about all the places that Brian Laundrie could be, and they've been places maybe that you have eluded capture, swamps and mountains and deserts and forests and even cities. But can you tell me which one is the easiest to get lost in and which one is the easiest to get caught in?
Hi, Ashley. Thanks for having me. Well, really, the situation always is going to dictate your response. And there are a lot of advantages and disadvantages. There are always trade-offs in any situation that you're in. For instance, the jungle is a very difficult, swamps, very difficult, mind-sucking place to be, but there's abundant water and there's generally lots of food that you can find, and it's very easy to get yourself lost and conceal a trail. Cities, some cities are really easy to get lost in. Others, like South Korea, they've got, 5,000 CCTV cameras all over the city with facial recognition technology. So it just depends on the situation, what is best. I don't know what Brian Laundrie knows, what his skill sets are, where he's comfortable. Those are the kinds of things that you need to know in order to assess where he's going to be comfortable and where he's not going to be comfortable.
Sometimes I wonder, Joel, if he's watching us, you know. I wonder, like, if he's watching TV somewhere. But then I saw an episode of you in the Florida Everglades, and you were actually really close to the people hunting you. You could even get eyes on them. I want to play that clip and ask you about it on the other side. Take a look.
Okay.
Out here with not a lot of activity.
These guys.
So again, they put the camera up
like a Christmas tree. Normally, I want to keep as much distance between Hunter Force and I as I can, but I've got a little friend. This is a remote-controlled robot with a manipulator arm and with 5 or 6 low-light infrared cameras to reconnaissance the area, see where they're at, see how many there are, and just what I'm up against. I also need to find a way to start the hunt without giving away my position. I can see the hunter force. I see a lot of gear. They look like they're ready for war. Five people I see so far.
I don't know, Joel. Something tells me that you're too good at it. I don't think Brian Laundrie would dare get close to people who might be able to spot him. Well, he's not an expert. You are. What do you guess that he's doing?
Well, I really don't know. What I would want to know if I were on this job is I would want to know all the intelligence I could get from his family, whether that's good or bad. Human intelligence can be some of the best intelligence you can get, but it's also unreliable, so you need to mitigate that with all the other things that you know. So, you know, you really need to dig in and try to read this guy's brain and see where he's going to be comfortable, what kind of skill sets he has, because people, you know, we're animals. We could take the path of least resistance. We're going to go to what is most comfortable for us. We're going to go to the easiest route. And so you need to find out what the easiest route is for this guy, where he's most comfortable, and then start there.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting you should say that because, you know, there were witnesses. We were talking to witnesses and they were saying Appalachian Trail. We think, I think we saw him on the Appalachian Trail, and he certainly knows the Appalachian Trail. But I was fascinated to watch this episode with you when it was like sometimes, you know, it's not always a bad thing to be spotted. And that threw me for a complete loop. But I'm going to play the moment and the viewers will get what you meant when they see it. Take a look.
Human intelligence or what people tell you is some of the best intelligence that you can get, but it's also some of the most unreliable. I go in and then conspicuously leave in a deceptive direction
When the Hunter Force comes through, they're going to ask around, and they're going to point them exactly the way I want them to think I went.
All right, guys, coming through. Hi. Oh, man. This is a little more than I was expecting.
The first time that I've asked there, they told me that they move that way. Then the other guys, they told me they didn't see anything.
As Joel anticipated, human intelligence is unpredictable.
Yeah.
As the villagers all unintentionally give conflicting reports to the ranger.
I suspect Brian Laundry is not smart enough to think in advance to do, you know, a bait and switch like you did. But I guess it is a good tactic.
Well, it can be in the situation where they didn't know who I was and I was kind of at a blank slate that I could go in and create whatever narrative I wanted to. Brian Laundry doesn't have that luxury. He's a wanted man. Whatever kind of deception he's going to be doing, if he's smart, it wouldn't be around any kind of people.
Right. Well, okay. So then another thing that I was surprised was when you were being hunted by the Philippine Army, you know, we just always assume that militaries have the highest falutin gear, right? Heat seeking this and right. Extra special that. And these guys had like a flashlight. But what they could do yeah. with that flashlight was nothing short of remarkable. I'm going to play the clip and I'm going to ask you about that after this. Take a look. Okay.
This 16-man unit doesn't depend on high-tech assets, but relies solely on their highly tuned tracking skills. The Rangers look for Joel's tracks by casting, systematically searching in a circular pattern to locate any sign of spore.
Wala bang mas makilir dyan? Yun. We cannot see clearly these footprints because there is no direct light on it. But if I'm going to use my flashlight, then make a shadow on the footprints, then I could tell this is a Panama boots, like my boots. This is still fresh. It's heading toward southwest direction.
I suspect that the people who are hunting for Brian Laundry will have a flashlight and they will have skills about those footprints and all the rest, but they're going to have a lot more, right, Joel?
Yes. Yeah. They're going to have all the tech that's available. I mean, those guys were the most exceptional trackers I went against in the whole series, Manhunt, Lone Target. And what they could do with just their tracking skills was exceptional. And other people I went against that were completely dependent upon technology were easier to beat. But whenever you're going against technology, it's always man against man. It's always brain against brain. If I'm going against a dog or a drone or anything that's not the actual tracker, I have to beat the tracker. I don't try to beat the dog. You can't beat the dog. I'm not trying to beat the infrared thermal imaging. I can't beat that. What I can beat is I can get in the man's head that's operating all that stuff and make him doubt what he's getting from his technology or from his dog. And so that's what you have to do. You have to break the bond between or the connection, the communication between the technology and the person operating it. So it's always a strategic game, a mental game against the people hunting you.
I could talk to you.
I think
for
it's a matter of time
hour,
for Laundry.
And I'm glad you said that, because I think that's what a lot of people watching keep hoping, that it's a matter of time. They want this to come to an yeah. end. They want closure for the Petito family. And they just want yes. answers as to this bizarre mystery. I want to just let our viewers know about something that you've done recently. Joel, it's cool. It's like all the secrets, right? All your secrets of how to evade and escape. It's actually an app. It's called Escape and Evade. You go to escapeandevademobile.com. Is that right, Joel? Escapeandevademobile.com?
Yes,
is that going to get you there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's going to get you to our website, and you can sign up there, and you'll get updates, and they'll let you know what's going on with this as we develop and launch the app. But it's going to be an amazing augmented reality game experience where you're able to do deception trails, set booby traps, track people. It's a very intense experience, and I think people are going to like it.
I can't wait. Thank you. Joel, it's been really nice to talk to you. Awesome. Thank you for this. Appreciate it.
A pleasure. Thanks for having me on, Ashley.
Awesome. Joel Lambert joining us tonight. And still to come, is it ever okay to lie? I know your parents said no. This next segment is going to be tough for you because sometimes it helps catch bad guys. And what the police might be doing right now with lies to try to catch a bad guy? Well, you don't want to miss this. never tell a lie. You probably heard that since birth, right? It's a golden rule. You are not supposed to break that rule. But when it comes to law enforcement, lying is actually a very effective tool. And you might not know it, but it is legal. Moral? I hear you. Okay. But legal? There's no question. There's no doubt about it. It's legal. And lying has helped catch some of the worst of the worst. Take, for example, Dahlia DiPolito, a woman who hired a hitman to kill her husband. Police intervened before it happened, thank God. And then they went ahead and set up a sting to break the fake news to Dahlia of her husband's bloody death. And just watch her reaction, because honestly, folks, it is nothing short of Oscar worthy.
Listen, we had a report of a disturbance at your house, and there were shots fired. Is your husband, Michael? Okay, I'm sorry to tell you, ma'am. He's been killed.
No, he's
been killed, ma'am. I'm sorry.
No, he's not.
Try to calm down.
Right now, we need to get you to a police station.
I can't let you stay, ma'am. We have to do our job. If you want us to find his killer.
I mean, that's amazing. It's just amazing, even the shaking fingers, all of it, right? She knew she'd planned the whole thing, but he wasn't dead. And this moment has been playing over and over in my head. Why? Well, since Christopher Laundrie was invited to join the police in the search for his son. Okay, I'm going to make the connection here. Did any one of us ever really believe that Mr. Laundrie could be of use in the look-see, the search? 3 weeks later, come on, 3 weeks later, let me show you his trails that he liked. Well, maybe he was useful. Maybe he was helpful. Maybe they just wanted to see Mr. Laundrie's reaction to something Mr. Laundrie wasn't expecting. I think it is a fair question. And my two guests know a thing or two about strategic crime fighting. Sheriff Mark Lamb from Pinal County, Arizona. He is the face of the American Sheriff Network. And also with us tonight, former NYPD Detective Dr. Alfred Titus. That's doctor, folks. He's a professor at John Jay College of Criminal Justice. To the both of you, welcome. Okay, Sheriff Lamb, am I crazy to assume that taking Mr. Laundrie to help search 3 weeks after the search had begun was actually an entirely different strategy? And that was to maybe put something unsettling in front of him and see what his reaction is, to see if he's really telling the truth about my son went hiking in the swamp.
Yeah, Ashley, thanks for having me on. You know, it's hard to say what their goal was there, but there's always different types of tactics that we'll employ. Spending time with somebody to see if they actually may have played a role in this was probably one of their goals, just to see if he might slip up along the way. When we interview people, we will consistently try to get their story out of them and see if that story changes along the way. That might have been one of the things they were looking at. And genuinely, maybe they thought, let's take a chance and see if he actually might lead us to somewhere or put us on Laundrie's path. But, you know, there could be various reasons of why they did this.
Yeah, Dr. Titus, so we sort of went through a whole lot of scenarios in my head, and I need you to get me off the ledge if I'm too far out there. But I wondered if they might even go so far as to take you know, what look like human remains and happen upon them with Mr. Laundrie. Because if Mr. Laundrie's telling the truth and his boy really did go out there hiking and they came upon human remains, well, that would be a very genuine, very hard to act moment. That would be the worst moment in a man's life. But if Mr. Laundrie saw human remains and he knew that his son was nowhere near that swamp, well, you'd have to act like Dahlia DiPolito to make it seem as though you're devastated. Am I crazy about that, Dr. Titus?
Not at all, Ashley. First of all, thank you for having me tonight. But you are absolutely correct. The thing about investigations and the way investigators operate is they look for these key tells, which is what we call them tells. And that's eye movement, That's nervous behavior, perspiration. All of these little trigger things are things that allow us to know that there's something afoot. Either the person is feeling guilty or something is just wrong. So there are multiple tells that we look for. And that's what it sounds like law enforcement is trying to do here. They are almost at their wit's end, and they are just looking for some kind of answer, some kind of information that could direct them.
Yeah, and I'm not suggesting that they'd put real human remains out there. There's plenty of different kinds of props you can make it look like. Because when Dahlia DiPolito's husband, was shown to her as being dead, they put makeup on them. They don't really kill them. You know, clearly you can fake something to look very real. So, okay, Sheriff Lamb, I want to be really clear that my staff and I talked out this whole scene a couple days ago, and we decided not to go to air with it because we didn't want that to be something that the laundries might know prior to actually going out for that search, because the search was planned and it was called off and it was supposed to happen again. We wanted to make sure it happened, it was done, so that would not let the cat out of the bag. But I did want to ask you, Sheriff Lamb, the FBI took dozens of boxes out of that home, right? They walked out with all sorts of stuff, and Brian Laundrie's room is still in there. So I wondered if they might have taken an item of clothing without the laundries knowing, because that could be one of the plants in the swamp, right? It's Brian's ball cap, it's Brian's favorite shirt, and then there's human remains and total confusion. Do you see what I mean? Like, I could see that happening. Is that a strategy that they might employ?
Yeah, I mean, it could be a strategy. I mean, that's a tough strategy to try to show a father what might be the remains of their son. I don't know that a lot of law enforcement agencies would go that far. But if they suspected the father as being guilty of doing it, they might. This is what they did to that other gal who they talked to her, you know, they told her that her husband had been killed because they had solid evidence that she was trying to hire somebody to kill her. So that kind of went along that path. But this is a kind of a different situation. I'd be surprised if they would use that tactic. But I mean, who knows? They might.
Yeah, we don't know what they have, right, Mark? I mean, honestly, we don't know if there's surveillance, if there's something tapped that gave them some evidence, and they just need that one extra little piece. And that one extra little piece is that dramatic reaction or that very faked reaction. I don't know. Okay, guys, when we come back after the break, I want to ask you a couple questions about another case that we've been following. Daniel Robinson, this handsome young geologist, just vanishes in the Arizona desert. And wouldn't you know, we've got an Arizona sheriff on. So I'm going to go over some of these mystifying clues, just mystifying things in Daniel Robinson's disappearance, and see if maybe we can, you know, find out if there's another piece of the puzzle that's just waiting to be found. We're back right after this. So back in June, Daniel Robinson disappeared in a very strange way in the Arizona desert. You might have heard of him. He is this handsome young geologist. What it was like, I think, just 4 miles away from his work site, just vanishes. But here's the weird part. His dad has been there ever since looking for him. And what he and a private investigator discovered was that the airbags in Daniel's Jeep, which was flipped over, those airbags actually deployed 11 miles prior to the spot where it flipped over in that desert. And that is a hot sun, okay? So you imagine if he's gone somewhere, would he leave his keys and his wallet in the Jeep? Well, the keys and wallet were in there. The starter had been turned over 40 times. So the question is, back with Sheriff Mark Lamb from Arizona and Dr. Alfred Titus, this is your backyard, Sheriff Lamb. It is hard to survive in the desert. It has been months. But that mystery, you can't ignore that there's something very strange there.
Oh, absolutely. There are strange circumstances to this. And yes, you're right. The desert is an extremely unforgiving place, especially coming out of the months that we just came out of. Very hot. Very difficult to survive if you get out there. I just want to caveat this. One of the difficult things in with families is it is not against the law to just disappear. And people disappear all the time. Now, there are some circumstances that make this seem very strange, which is why I'm sure that they're looking into it as heavy as they are. But we have people disappear all the time that want to disappear. And unfortunately, that's not against the law for those people to do that. So it's hard to find them. or even expend a lot of resources finding them, because they may just not want to be found.
It's an odd story, especially just with those circumstances, the flipped Jeep, the airbags, you know, 11 miles prior. I mean, it's crazy. So, Dr. Titus, one of the things that, you know, you could read into it because you know your business better than I do. The police have turned over a lot of their material in this investigation to the private investigator to continue his work. And I just assume that if police are turning over material, they're not looking at it as criminal anymore, because they hold that stuff close to the vest if they think there's something afoot.
That is correct, Ashley. When they are in the midst of a criminal investigation, they do not release information. So if the information is being released, that means that you're right. They're not looking at it as a criminal case anymore. And as possible, as the sheriff said, he may just not want to be found. And that's a possibility that has to be explored.
Yeah, it's hard. You look at these pictures of a guy who just looks so successful. There he is at his geology site. He looks like he's so outdoorsy, full of life and excited. I interviewed his dad, Sheriff Lamb, and that's the PI who was out there too. He hasn't left. Like, he changed states. He's been there ever since. You know, how, as a law enforcement officer, do you handle the families that just say, "I will never let this go"?
Well, you know, I'm a dad of five kids. I wouldn't leave either. I would keep looking. I would hire a private investigator. I would do the things that the dad is doing. And my heart goes out to the family. We deal with search and rescue calls all the time. This seems more to me like a search and rescue call. We get 300 plus a year in my agency, and we have odd circumstances just like this. And sometimes we don't ever find the people. Most of the time we are successful. But as a father, I'm 100% on board with this dad. I'd be here until I found him as well.
I hear you. As a parent, my heart broke speaking to him. I just wish them all the love and God's support. And to the two of you, thank you so much on this Friday night for being with me. I sure appreciate it. Sheriff Mark Lamb and Dr. Alfred Titus, I hope you'll come back again.
Thank you, Ashley.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. So one last note before we leave. We had quite a week, you know, the Petito family has had a hell of a few weeks. And I just wanted to reiterate that this is all about Gabby Petito and her family at this point. They deserve justice and they deserve answers. And they also want to make this all have some meaning. And so to that end, Joe Petito and his family have launched the GabbyPetitoFoundation.org. It would be really nice if you, you know, took a peek, because what they want is for other missing people to be found. And they want cases like Daniel's to have more focus, attention, and fun. So there you go. Have yourself a great week, and I'll see you right back here on Monday.